And welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanige. My guest today is Kevin Moyer. He is a partner in the accounting and advisory firm of Sachs LLP, and he leads the firm's transaction services advisory practice. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I think I flubbed the name. It's the transaction advisory services practice.
Get it right. Transaction strategy and transformation is the
there you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get that right. For viewers who don't know, Kevin was also a panelist on a recent NJ Biz panel that went over the VC and M&A markets. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. It was a great discussion. But I was really interested in talking to you today because you're organizing a conference on investing in M&A in the veterinary industry, which is coming up next on May 10th at the Sachs headquarters in Parsippany. There'll be a registration link in the post accompanying this video for folks interested in that. And I wanted to start there because I'm curious as to what the genesis of that conference was. What is it about that particular subject that you thought would justify or carry a half day long conference?
No, absolutely. It's a great question. Yeah, we see a lot of activity within our group as it relates to just overall healthcare, right? When you think of different specialties and niches, and kind of one of the emerging niches that we've been seeing more and more of over the last year is veterinary.
Okay.
I think that you're seeing a lot more corporate aggregators and consolidators coming into the market. You know, you have an aging DVM population, doctor of veterinary medicine, that, you know, is looking for some sort of exit. And that exit traditionally has been either via strategic or private equity. So, you know, I have a very close friend who's at KPMG who runs the veterinary group for private equity there. And we thought, you know, by way of just putting our heads together, hey, we haven't seen a conference done to date that focuses on veterinary M&A. And we kind of put some feelers out and got a resounding response. And that's kind of what led to a joint Sachs KPMG, first of its kind, veterinary
right. M&A. Okay. Well, it caught my eye for a number of reasons, in part because we've done a few at NJ Biz, we've done a few stories about the business. One, obviously, the whole phenomenon of pandemic pets, which was a huge driver in the market, in the industry. And the other was the shortage of veterinarians, particularly in New Jersey. New Jersey will very soon have a veterinary school, but it hasn't had one for years. Forever. And I'm curious as to how those dynamics, those phenomenon play into the market. What do they do to valuations? What are you seeing in terms of the kinds of businesses that you're talking about? You mentioned it, the older DVMs starting to think about getting out. Are there newer ones coming in? How does that those kinds of things play in? What's the market look like now?
So that's a great question. So there's a few ways to probably approach that. You know, when you think of vet, there's primary vet care, there's emergency care, there's specialty care. When you think of equine, equine is actually one of the sectors that's struggling the most within vet, right? Vets are leaving the practice, whether it be via burnout, compassion fatigue, which is a very real thing, just too heavy of caseloads. And it's creating kind of micro gaps within the general macro vet space. When you look at the total number of vet schools, right, throughout the United States, I believe we're roughly 32, and the hyper-competitiveness of getting into vet school, you know, it's very hard to put out, you know, vet after vet year over year to keep up with demand, which has been speculated to be about 19% from now until 2030. So you have a tremendous demand. You know, you hit COVID, great point. You know, you have a lot of people who said, well, I'm at home. I'm working a little more loosely. You know, maybe I'll get a vet, right, to keep me company, maybe right. combat loneliness. And now that's just kind of upticked the amount of care that's been given, you know, to the domestic pet, you know, if you will, what's the word over here? Domestic pet kind of overall force, right? So when you think of pets historically, you know, traditionally maybe you thought of them more as outdoor animals. Now they're becoming family members, right? So you're looking for the utmost care, you know, the best quality food, whether it be organic or otherwise. That's where you're starting to see a lot of ancillary or tangential pet service offerings when you think of pet care products and things that kind of augment the veterinary industry that are really doing very well. So I do think demand is going to continue to be something that needs combating. Great to hear in New Jersey the first kind of vet schools going up. I mean, that's very exciting to us. But, you know, overall, I do think there's a strong want to get into the vet schools, but just, again, very hyper-competitive. To get in and kind of with the numbers they're putting out, you know, even with a, you know, let's say a 41,000 person or vet demand by 2030, they still anticipate being 15,000 short. So to your point, how do you fill that gap, right? Is it offering incentives, you know, to go into the programs? Is it expanding vet schools? Is it lowering the criteria to get into vet school? And I think a lot of those questions are kind of TBD, but certainly on the minds of DVMs, aggregators, private equity alike.
Okay. So what kind of businesses are the targets? I mean, I think a lot of folks have their, especially pet owners, have sure. in their mind a single proprietor, a sole proprietorship, a kindly old gent who's been in the business forever and is taking care sure. of their dogs and cats and things. But as you alluded to equine practices, that's a big business. You just have to drive through Monmouth County and you can see yep. the horse farms there. I mean, clearly there are different levels of complexity here. What kind of businesses are you seeing targeted that are the ones that are selling?
You know, I would say more traditionally, you're going to see your one to two to maybe three DVM primary care, if you will, vet practices. There is an emergence of emergency room kind of roll-ups as well. As you increase the number of DVMs and you increase the underlying staff, that's kind of when you think about multiple accretion, right? So, you know, there's probably 50 true corporate consolidators that exist in the market. I would define that as a consolidator that owns 10 or more clinics, right? So, some are much, you know, much greater, some are a little bit less, but overall, there's 30,000 clinics in the U.S. And just by way of math, maybe there's roughly 10,000 owned by aggregators. There's a lot that are still single and independent. And the question becomes to many of them as they get up in their career, do I want to handle the back office, right? Do I want to be responsible for employee retention, management, et cetera? Mm-hmm. And private equity and aggregators alike kind of provide that pathway to absorb the back office, provide an influx of capital for growth, and take a lot of maybe the burden of running the day-to-day away from the DVM and allowing them to focus on what they went to school for, which is much more the clinical side of the business, which is what I think a lot of them prefer. So, you know, we're seeing a wide range of targets, to your point. Probably more so in the specialty niche space, kind of what we talked about, equine, et cetera, because they are few far between right now. Mm-hmm. But still very hyper-competitive market. I've seen multiples, you know, they've died down slightly, a little bit of a pause in the market, but going back a year is high as 15 to 20 times EBITDA, depending on the size and scale of the clinic itself.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's pretty impressive. Is it mainly private equity firms doing roll-ups, or are you seeing, you know, strategic combinations? I mean, there are some really large veterinary hospitals in New Jersey. I mean, our dog just had knee surgery at one in Tinton Falls. So that's a fairly elaborate operation. Is it really limited to private equity firms doing roll-ups, or are there different kinds of strategic combinations that you're seeing?
I would certainly say that historically and predominantly it's been strategic acquirers in the markets, corporate consolidators. Mm-hmm. I think private equity, like many other niches of healthcare and other industries, is kind of found a foothold. And those that know the space well are kind of putting their chips on the table, right? So they're going a little more aggressively at targets that maybe otherwise the corporate aggregator wouldn't find appealing. That could be geography, that could be scale, that could be client base, that could be revenue. But I do think that it's starting to level out a little bit when you think of those aggregators, once again, PE or strategic, who have scale, mm-hmm. as to what the percentage is across, again, strategic private equity or financial backed aggregators.
Okay. And you mentioned all the clinics throughout the United States. What can you tell us about the differences in geography? We've covered a little bit of what it's like here sure. in New Jersey. Is this typical, or are there places where valuations are different, where the practice is different, where they're that are sort of driven by different factors? What's it look like sure. elsewhere?
I think a lot of it, you know, when you think of the vet industry, the majority of it's private pay, right? You may have a scenario where you pay for your pet care, and then you have secondary insurance that reimburses you. But as far as the, you know, the transaction between yourself and the doctor is private pay, which makes it very attractive, right, to the acquirer not having to deal with insurance companies. When you think of the coast, right, East and West Coast, you know, I would say predominantly California is the most, just by way of density and scale, the most, you know, DVM clinics sure. within the state. But we've also seen multiples, interestingly enough, trade higher in the kind of the East and West Coast markets as opposed to the Midwest. So when you think of just general cost of living, I think there's certainly a factor to place in there. Obviously, we're going through an inflationary period. But traditionally, I would say that your kind of, you know, east, northeast specifically, and probably your bottom west coast have been trading at the highest multiples today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting that not in the West Coast, because I would have thought I'm not in the Midwest. I mean, I would have thought, because of the agricultural based economy in some of those states that there would have been there would have been more activity there. But that's it's it really comes down to, it sounds like, population density.
I think so. I think that, and I think, you have a lot of DVMs who are, to your earlier point, just one-off providers who can only handle a certain caseload, right? So their revenue is kind of capped. And if they don't have the ability to expand either within their current facility or kind of an outlet to do so otherwise, the question becomes, are they attractive to private equity, right? Having myself living in the Midwest, we see a tremendous amount of single DVM clinics, but not too many that have two, three, four DVMs on staff until you get to the emergency room setting.
Okay. Okay.
So I think that maybe the propensity for private equity aggregators to go coast to coast is you do see a much more dense clinic, followed by a denser population and a greater number of, in theory, pets per household, right? When you think of just the overall math.
Okay. Now you mentioned I think you mentioned EBITDA multiples. Is that the sort of standard metric that you're using? Are there other sort of metrics that are sort of unique to this business, or is it really just, multiples of revenue or EBITDA or the usual sorts of things?
I think traditionally in M&A, you're always going to have variations of EBITDA multiples. You may look at free cash flow more heavily and apply a multiple there. I would say when you look at DVMs, you certainly try to back into a revenue or production per DVM, right? That's a big basis. So let's say the average DVM produces 600,000 to 700,000 per year in top line revenue. It's how do you take that model and how do you scale that? Can you provide, ancillary services? Is there a way to augment the labor shortage, that we have currently? When you think of the vet practices, another probably caveat as to why they may go to a consolidator and aggregator is it's very hard to find vet techs and vet nurses right now, right? Just like they're leaving the industry. So kind of latching onto an aggregator in the same geographic area provides you the ability, in theory, to utilize a floating or traveling nurse or vet tech to kind of augment and help staff your overall operation. So, I think that again, when you look at the denser markets, there's just simply more clinics, which allows for that opportunity to exist a little bit more. When you're more in the rural areas, whether it be Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, you may have a clinic that services a 20, 30, 40-mile radius, right? There may just not be that density that you would see in the larger markets.
Okay. We mentioned the vet school opening in New Jersey. That's at Rowan University in Gloucester County. Does one vet school opening in a state like New Jersey going to affect the market? I mean, we've mentioned the difficulty in hiring and some of the shortages. Does one vet school opening in this kind of market in the Northeast, will that have any, do you think, any sort of effect on valuations?
Has a direct effect on valuations. I certainly think it's going to help supply the demand, right? So just the overarching demand, very dense state like New Jersey, kind of, tucking into New York City and in Connecticut as well. And actually being the first vet school in New Jersey, I think that's a great precedent being set, right? So, I do think that it's certainly going to help demand. To the extent of will that demand equate to valuation and increase in multiples, I think that's probably not directly, maybe tangentially to an extent. But again, I really think it's heavily focused on the demand to allow new clinics to open, right? Because this, in theory, these DVMs that are exiting, or veterinary school are going to have the opportunity to either go work for an aggregator or to open up their own veterinary facility. And then the question becomes, again, do they want the back office headache? Do they want to manage staff, or do they want to kind of tuck into an existing platform? And I think that's going to be interesting because that's where I could see valuations moving slightly is when they're tucking into existing platforms, and now they're generating that revenue within that aggregator, right, as opposed to a one-off basis.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see how that plays out. I think pet owners are will at the very least will welcome that. If I could, since I've got you, I'm curious. I'd like to ask you a couple just sort of general M&A questions along the lines of the discussion that we just had recently at NJ Biz. First of all, just for in general, the second half, what does the M&A market look like to you? Are you is there a robust pipeline of deals, or is it backing off a little bit? Is there some concern about what the economy in general is going to look like in the second half? What are you expecting?
I think there's always a concern, right? I think particularly this year with interest rates, I didn't see if they got moved today at the Fed meeting, but I think overall there's certainly a little bit of a softening and maybe a contraction in just macro M&A. You'll still have defensive industries going back to healthcare, medical devices and services, and some others that are very defensive, as well as like living in a software economy where tech's blending with non-tech kind of et cetera. But heading into the second half of the year, I'm slightly optimistic. You know, I do think that while the pace and the velocity probably won't mimic what we've seen historically in the recent years, I do think that we'll settle, you know, somewhat relatively strong. At least that's the hope. You know, traditionally, when M&A kind of dovetails, you'll see turnaround restructuring work start to pick up, right? When you think of companies that are struggling or missing debt covenants or kind of otherwise, in hoping we don't see much of that, haven't seen much of that yet, slightly, but not too much. And I think the banks will dictate as well the extent of M&A activity that exists. I mean, majority of banks are you know, tightening their credit underwriting standards, right? And maybe they're raising rates concurrently. So in a way, it's a culmination of if you're an acquirer, do you sit by and kind of wait till the storm passes? A lot of companies now are focusing on performance improvement, kind of getting their house in order, right, versus acquiring. So I think with all that considered, I would say we finished relatively strong, but to the degree of strength we finished with, I think it's still TBD.
Okay. And is there any hope for the IPO market? I mean, here in New Jersey, there are a lot of tech startups. I think the people who are running those companies are looking at that and wondering if they decide they want an exit, what is it going to look like? It doesn't look like it's going to be a public offering, at least anytime soon. What can you tell us about what you're thinking about in terms of the IPO market for the rest of the year?
I think there's cyclicality in everything, right? When you think of just the M&A market as a whole and entering next point. I think that I've seen personally some stalled IPOs, to your point, IPOs that were teeing up that maybe has tabled that, you know, they weren't getting the valuations, they weren't commanding the capital that they intended. I, you know, personally, when you think of the domestic IPO market, I do think it's going to be relatively soft throughout 2023. Okay. When you look at other countries or other areas of the world, when you think of Asia, right, it's one of the hottest IPO markets right now to date. So, you know, I think that maybe going offshore is an option for some, but those that want to domestically IPO, I do see a little bit of a struggle and some headwinds kind of going into the balance of the year. I don't think it's going to be nearly as active as, again, what we've seen historically.
Okay. And one more thing before I let you go. You mentioned interest rates. I think we're speaking on May 3rd. The Fed, I believe, is meeting this week and is expected to, mm-hmm. yet again, raise interest rates. Mm-hmm. What is the most, and then plus there's the whole debt ceiling issue in Washington that's out there. Are those the biggest question marks going forward for the M&A and IPO markets? What are the biggest factors that you're looking at?
I think I certainly think interest rates play a tremendous role. You know, I also think that you're seeing now, you know, bank failures happening, right? Runs on banks, right, that historically maybe weren't an issue or a concern even during the pandemic, quite frankly,
right,
which are a little bit shocking to an extent. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some macro economic maybe trends that are being watched closely. Certainly there's some micro within the U.S. trends, but there's just a lot of volatility right now, right? So, you know, overall, I think that the interest rate environment coupled with some other items really creates the volatility that makes historically some decisions that were a little bit easier right now a little bit tougher, right? Especially when you're allocating capital. You're trying to allocate for, you know, the highest return with the least risk, you know, obviously involved within the transaction. But right now, I think there's a little bit of shakiness and a little bit of just tentativeness to sit on the sidelines and kind of wait to see what the others do. And typically, again, private equity usually leads the trends as it relates to what industries are going to do well, right, where they're going to succeed, and where they're going to put their chips. And, you know, domestic capital, and I would say probably more retail capital is a better term, to, you know, tends to follow. So it's certainly going to be interesting to watch through the balance of the future.
Okay. Well, I hope you come back and share some more insights as we go forward. Again, the conference on investors and M&A in the veterinary industry is May 10th from 9 to 1. Have I got the times right?
Yes, from 9 to 1. We're going to host the panel. We have a great keynote speaker. So very much looking forward to hosting the conference on site. And just another call out. Post-conference, we will be issuing a recording for anyone that wants to register but can attend in person as well.
Okay, very good. So if you're interested, again, there's a registration link. Kevin Moyer, partner at Sachs LLP, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.